From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, you know, yesterday I went to a place and maybe I would have gotten iced tea, but I got water, you know. And, you know, you don't go in and get a double cheeseburger. I got a junior cheeseburger, okay? And I had graham crackers for dinner, I guess. So you obviously have to make sacrifices.
And we've got to have a booming economy creating jobs for everybody. And that's what I strongly believe. That's the best way to increase wages. I have said on a number of occasions that we could have a lower minimum wage or no minimum wage as part of increasing Illinois competitiveness. I've said that many times.
Well, you know, I think he definitely cannot relate to everyday voters, and he cannot relate to working families.
Is that a yes?
That's a yes.
That's a yes.
Yes.
And that final comment there was from Paul Vallis, a Democratic lieutenant governor candidate, responding to a question of whether Bruce Rauner was too rich to be governor. At the top of the audio, we heard Governor Pat Quinn talking about the sacrifices he made while doing a minimum wage challenge, although he didn't forego his state police protection during that time, I don't think. And we heard Bruce Rauner talking on a radio interview on WJBC in Bloomington back in January, where he was suggesting lowering the minimum wage. Some of the topics, or at least the campaign issues that the candidates used during the past week, we'll talk about those and other issues on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of Public Affairs Reporting at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and our guest and friend, John O'Connor of the Associated Press. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you, Bill.
And last time we let you plug your Abraham Lincoln one-man play, but we don't get to do that today, so I'm sorry you have to put that voice, Abe's voice, away for the show.
Well, the play's over now, for one thing.
Well, that's true. No promotion out of it this time. We had Pat Quinn talking about that he would order a smaller cheeseburger and eat graham crackers. So he was going on the issue of the minimum wage, something he's been trying to use as a tool to get it out for the election in November, as there will be an advisory question on that. And we had Bruce Rauner countering that view from earlier in the year. So where are we on the minimum wage, and was this a substantive policy discussion, or was this just a publicity stunt that he got to share his graham cracker eating with us?
Well, why don't we start there with Governor Pat Quinn in this so-called minimum wage challenge, and then perhaps discuss Rauner separately, because that revelation was something new and maybe does actually get into the policy. Quinn is saying that he's taking this challenge where he has $79 to live for a week that started Sunday, will end now coming up this weekend, but it notably does not include housing or transportation or, as you said, Bill, his state police or any of the aides who travel with him and who, you know, do presumably a lot of the grunt work that an individual, particularly if you're talking about maybe a single parent or what have you, would have to do if they were really living on the minimum wage. So I think that this is something that you've seen a lot of politicians do, and Quinn says that he is trying to understand the plight of those who are making this wage and show the sacrifices that they make. I'm not sure it actually did that. I think to many people, it came across as almost trite and a clear political move. How does somebody have that difficult a time getting by on $80 for really just food, especially considering that, you know, he's spending his time at fundraisers here and there, what have you? So I'm not sure how many people making the minimum wage are sympathizing with a poor guy who's got to order iced tea. He made comments saying, you know, bananas 3 days for breakfast. Like, that's really a rough thing, that he's eating macaroni and cheese, which when you think about it, that takes butter and milk, kind of more of the more expensive meals that you could have if you were really, really trying to walk watch it and go way cheap. There are certainly alternatives or healthier ones than graham crackers for dinner. So, yes, maybe he is winning a whole lot of points with this. He's certainly gotten a ton of publicity. But nonetheless, there are plenty of critics and those who say that maybe it's not quite connecting with really what the minimum wage workers are going through.
Well, I think the $79 is based on a calculation of what would be left for a person on minimum wage after they pay housing and those kinds of costs. Because obviously,
well, right,
if
you
look at
about,
it, $79 mm-hmm. for 40 hours of work, that doesn't equate to the minimum wage where it stands now. To me, it's a publicity stunt, and it might be interesting to do it, to put yourself in someone else's shoes just to see what it would be like. My guess is there are a lot of college students who have bananas for breakfast and ramen noodles for dinner.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember those days. To me, the difficulty, it's not what am I going to eat today. It's that psychological sense of precariousness. What happens exactly. if I have something happen to me that Medicaid won't cover? What happens if suddenly I have to rush a kid to the doctor? Or what happens when I need to buy new shoes for the kid? Or what happens if my old clunker gets a flat tire? There's absolutely no margin to take care of life's contingencies for someone at that level.
Doing it for a week. Exactly, Charlie. That, yeah, I think, gets to the whole point of it, that you don't have to worry about it. So
no, I mean,
Quinn,
there's people
saying,
who fast for a week, for heaven's sakes, or go on a liquid right. diet to lose weight for a week. That's no big deal.
You know, you got from the Quinn campaign an email saying that how hard it has been, and it was his niece's birthday, and he wasn't able to afford a present. He wrote her a letter and gave her $1, but she understood. And it was, again, it's those sort of things, yes, that when you can't afford, perhaps when you're on the minimum wage, but in a week you probably could. You know, I'm not sure that Quinn dealt with that
effectively.
Somebody on
minimum wage can't. Yeah, he could just tell. Hey, here's your buck and the letter, and we'll have a belated birthday party for you.
Exactly.
Related to the minimum wage, we played some audio there from Bruce Rauner back in January suggesting lowering the minimum wage. That's one of those issues that I feel a little bit lost as to where he stands exactly on it. Can you tell us, anybody at the State House, what the Rauner position is on the minimum wage?
At the moment?
I think your confusion, you are not alone in your confusion there, Bill. So this had been a back and forth during the primary, really, when Rauner, news had kind of leaked and videos from appearances that he had made while on the campaign circuit that he wanted to lower the minimum wage. That didn't go over well in the press, and you saw a retreat from the Rauner campaign. He said, hey, listen, that was a mistake. I was talking flippantly. I do not want to roll back the minimum wage, but I would support an increase in it, in fact, as long as it is coupled with other changes. For example, workers' compensation. Just what changes all it would be required, we're not 100% sure, but that's been one of them that he's named. Then an interview that he had done before the primary, so in January, on a radio program that didn't really gain any traction statewide, was presumably, you know, a campaign, some opposition research, what have you, or a reporter that is doing a really good dogged job and stumbles across it, sometimes comes out with a report that says, that finds this radio segment where Rauner not only suggests lowering the minimum wage, but eliminating it, and says, as we heard in that clip, that it's something that he'd suggested many times. That was the first that anybody had really heard that was even out there. Rauner's campaign trying to distance himself from it, saying that's old news, that was a long time ago. The whole point of his remarks in that radio interview from January was that he regretted and had changed, move off of that stance. So Rauner continuing his eventual take on the minimum wage, that he will support an increase if it is coupled with any changes that make Illinois more hospitable to business. But nonetheless, it's a pretty damning comment to have out there, and I'm sure one that we're already seeing the Quinn campaign really try and take advantage of to show how, quote-unquote, out of touch he is.
Yeah, the Quinn campaign would if his campaign, if Rauner's campaign is saying that's old news, the Quinn people would counter with, yeah, it's old news. That was two or three minimum wage positions ago. He's changed his mind several times. It's not all that unusual in a vacuum. If you listen to that as a Republican businessman, and you listen to that comment made in January, it's not all that unusual. But as someone who's trying to appeal to a wide electorate in a blue state, that's going to be problematic, and he has recognized that and has in fact moved off that. But it becomes a question of, as Charlie pointed out, where does he stand and where will he stand tomorrow?
Especially given that that was released the same time as news about Rauner belonging to this wine club that costs $100,000 a year to join, whether that's just a wine club or also more of kind of a vacation and what have you grouped in with that. But it certainly plays very well into the Quinn position that Rauner is somebody who can't be trusted because you don't know where he stands on issues, but also can't be trusted because if you're a regular Joe, this guy doesn't know what it's like. And look at me. I have gone through, lasted a week on $80 eating bananas, graham crackers, and mac and cheese.
Now, Quinn's running mate, Paul Vallis, it was a reporter asking the question, so it wasn't Vallis coming out and making this statement, but was essentially implying that Bruce Rauner is too rich to be governor. I didn't know, one, we would have a limitation on income limitation or minimum, for that matter, on who runs for governor. But he was saying he was too rich to run for governor?
I think the point he was trying to make, and which he clarified later on, was that Rauner's life experience would make it difficult for him to relate to the life experience of the average Illinoisan. And I don't think there's any limitation on how much or how little you should have when you're running for governor. What I think should be the, what would you say, kind of one of the qualifications is that you have some experience in government. And so I would be less, what would you say, quizzical about Rauner as a governor, had Rauner served as a county board president or had he been a mayor of a town, somewhere where he had some exposure to governance in the public arena as opposed to somebody who's kind of an insider who can wheel and deal with the mayor of Chicago and who can wheel and deal with these boards to get pension business, you know, who can give money to the Democrats in Pennsylvania to get a pension deal. Somebody who knows government from that side as opposed to someone who's operated in governance in the public spotlight.
But that's just it, Charlie. We're not really hearing a lot of that from the Quinn campaign. Instead, we're hearing continuously from the Quinn campaign, class warfare, he's out of touch. And they've gone around the edges with it and touched on it in campaign commercials and all of their remarks. But Vallis went beyond implying in answering that question. The reporter followed up and said, so are you saying he's too rich? Is that a yes? And Vallis said, yes, which is what I think does take this to another level. He didn't imply. He said it outright. So it was, in a sense, establishing criteria, and that's where there has been a lot of question during this campaign. Sure, is it fair to question how Bruce Rauner made his money, especially when he's using it to fund his own campaign and he's the potential chief executive? Is he going to run the state as he did his business, for example? And yet to say, no, he's too rich is a different thing for a candidate who's on that statewide ballot.
What happened to the basic idea of this country that the Bruce Rauner, if you look at what the founders were initially talking about, they initially didn't talk about pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They talked about life, liberty, and pursuit of property. This is what this country is all about, and why, to play devil's advocate, shouldn't we honor a man like Bruce Rauner, because he took the bull by the horns. He came up from a fairly modest background and rose to the top financially. And if he's successful in business, why can't he be successful in government without being a county board president? It's not. I don't think that the man at the top needs to know all the levers to pull. Well, he needs to surround himself with good people who know.
Well, let me suggest that I think experience is important, and I'll cite going to a totally different world. I'll cite the world of athletics. There's probably a lot of people who would say Michael Jordan was a pretty decent basketball player. There's not many people who would say Michael Jordan was an all-star baseball player.
But and how would they say he was as an owner of a basketball team?
Well, I'm talking about having experience in one and being the best in one particular venue doesn't necessarily qualify you to do good in another venue. It helps if you've had experience. And that's the point that I was trying to make earlier. I would be more comfortable with Bruce Rauner had Bruce Rauner been in some public position, holding some public office before, instead of deciding, well, I'm going to be governor.
Well, Tommy Lasorda and Tony La Russa were horrible ball players, but they're great managers.
And the same game.
Rauner, I think it's a valid question to bring up, and I've asked him, and he haven't gotten a direct response really. But would you hire somebody with no experience to run one of your companies? I'm a smart individual. Can I please be part of your private investment company? I'll go along with that. And that is not something that he has directly addressed. But I would like to move back to this question, just because I think John Cass's column was actually very on point in terms of the question of wealth and where it will play a role, particularly as the Quinn campaign is attempting, and a lot of people believe that he should be, for reasons that you've talked about, for example, Charlie, demonize Rauner for his wealth. And Cass brought up, you know, he made it in the private business, and there has been plenty of questions as to how he did that, and you look to, for example, nursing homes, Cayman Islands, what have you. But Rauner made his wealth in the private industry. What is really corrosive to state government is when individuals come into politics without a whole lot of wealth and then somehow end up leaving it with a whole lot of wealth, be it with side gigs as, you know, attorneys, law firms, or giving contracts out. Vallis, for example, has gotten contracts with state government and some fairly, he's by no means a millionaire off of it, but they're fairly lucrative, well-paying contracts, for example, helping out education. So I thought just that column is really worth a read when you think about where wealth should come into the equation in voters' minds and how much continues to go, ethical issues in state government, where you look at people that are managing to succeed fairly well, not necessarily directly off of taxpayers' backs, but indirectly.
I don't think it's I don't think Vallis is a good example, because Vallis has never been elected to anything. He's been
fair point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's been more of a policy nerd, a technocrat, and this is only his second time actually running for anything, and he didn't do very well the first time.
I think there are plenty of politicians who fit in that, though. You're right. He obviously is not an elected official who's doing that right now.
Well, just to add that one person who was in public office, may he rest in peace, Alan Dixon, when he was in the U.S. Senate 30 years ago, I remember reading, you know, his tax returns, and he, you know, 30 years ago had income and assets over $1 million. And this is a man who spent his entire career in public office, starting at the age of 19 as a police magistrate. So that's a better example than Paul Vallis.
Yeah.
I have a new criteria. I think they have to have driven their own vehicles for a regular part of the last few years. Seems like everybody that's running for office already has a driver. You're listening to State Week. Coming up, we're going to talk about property taxes and the governor's race.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's issue focuses on education, mandates, funding, Common Core, and racial disparity. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State and Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and John O'Connor of the Associated Press. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Amanda, property taxes were an issue this past week in the campaign, and now we're seeing governors talk about trying to control property taxes and end them, even though that's kind of a local issue.
Yes, Bill, you're right. Property taxes are a local issue, but this probably comes in part. They've been rising so much as the state has had its own issues. Property taxes are relied on to fund everything from municipal governments to schools, mosquito abatement districts, you name it. Quinn had made an issue of this in his budget proposal in saying that in almost an offset for an extension of the higher income tax rate that homeowners, so not renters, but homeowners would get basically a rebate check from the state government in their mailboxes to try and help out with the rising property tax issue. It's something that is statewide, but particularly in the Chicago suburbs, of course, a very important area in this election. Rauner's budget plan, he has said that he wants to roll back that income tax hike over the 4 years that he would have a term in office were he to be elected. But he's also said that he wants a property tax freeze. What exactly that means and how he would go about it is unclear. He's talked about unless voters give approval. Illinois already has that in place. In a sense, there's property tax caps and for non-home rural communities, and you need to get voters' approval to raise it above the basically like the CPI or 5% above what it was the year prior. So there already is, in a sense, that. But where Quinn has come out against Rauner, and I think very validly, is that it doesn't really make sense. When Rauner is continually promising to put education as a top priority and put more money into schools, into higher education, into infrastructure, while he wants a lower income tax rate, but also freezing local property taxes, money has to come from somewhere.
Right. That Paul Vallis was the school expert and lieutenant governor candidate under Quinn came out last week with the district by district statewide impact of ending the he claimed that through a series of calculations and losing $8 billion a year from the income tax surcharge and making that permanent, that schools would suffer a $4 billion a year cut, and it would mean, conservatively, he claimed, a loss of 27,000 teachers.
Or an increase in property taxes.
Right, right. And that, and exactly what Amanda just said, that Alice basically said that the money has to come from somewhere. Rauner's people were very upset with that statement and claimed that the numbers were fantasy land and that Bruce Rauner was going to make education a priority, but did not say where that money would come from.
Well, if you look at the property tax system, it's probably the most despised tax in Illinois. And the bulk of the money, I went to the Department of Revenue's website to get this data. And in the last tax year, statewide, something like $27 billion was collected in property taxes, none of which goes to state government. That's more than the income tax and the sales tax bring in to the state. Of that money, about $16 billion of it goes to public schools. And the problem is, as Vallis pointed out, if you do something with property taxes, freeze, whatever the heck that means, where do the schools get the money? And the state's over-reliance on property taxes to fund public schools has a long history. People have attempted different ways to address the problem. We've just not been able to do it. And the property taxes themselves vary so much. The rate that people pay varies so much based on where you live. For example, according to the Department of Revenue's website, there are communities in DuPage and Cook County, very well-to-do communities, where the tax rate is $5 or $6 per $100 of assessed valuation. In Chicago, it's $6.52. Springfield at $7.95. And then there are the communities in the south suburbs, places like Calumet City, Chicago Heights, Harvey, Park Forest, where the tax rate is in excess of $20 per $100 of assessed valuation. It's just such a patchwork, and it needs to be remedied. But Rauner provides no specifics. What do you mean by a freeze? What are you going to freeze? The rates? Statutorily, rates are set already, and to exceed those rates, a school district has to get a referendum approval. Are you going to freeze assessments? We tried that. Are you going to put a cap on levies? We have that in place with the tax caps that apply to Cook and the Collar counties and about a third of the downstate counties. So it's, without more specifics, you know, it's just it's a very difficult statement to react to intelligently because you don't know what the deuce they're talking about.
Time now for a few notes from the field. We'll try to get some in, and we'll start with Amanda at the State House.
Just since we last taped this program, a controversial issue in Illinois, hydraulic fracturing. We've seen some movement there. The Department of Natural Resources came forth with some long-awaited rules that would govern how it would pan out. It still isn't finalized, and of course, folks still aren't happy. The business community and the drillers saying that now DNR has gone too far. Environmentalists saying that it's better than the first shot, but still not good enough and dangerous for the environment.
John O'Connor.
The mention earlier of Governor Quinn getting a junior cheeseburger reminded me of an article that Bernard Schoenberg, the political writer for the State Journal Register here in Springfield, wrote several years ago right after Quinn became governor, in which he talked to him about Quinn being a Vietnam War era candidate, and I believe, if I recall correctly, he was disqualified from military service because of high blood pressure. And Quinn told Bernie Schoenberg at the time that he has sworn off table salt ever since then. He's never used any table salt. But if people who have covered his campaigns or traveled with him at all know that he eats quite a few fast food burgers, so I'm sure he gets quite the sodium quotient there.
And Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Circuit Court judge here in Sangamon County earlier this week told the lawyers involved in the suits challenging the pension reform law to kind of get their act together, to speed up the filing, speed up the arguments. He wants the case finished by the end of the year because, as he said, in the wake of the decision saying that the state can't cut subsidized health insurance for state retirees, it's pretty clear that the Constitution will not allow, well, I shouldn't put words in the judge's mouth. He said that the Canerva decision means that there's really no need to spend a lot of time messing around with the issues at the circuit court level. Let's kick it on so it can get up to the Supreme Court to see what they say.
And that's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, John O'Connor of the Associated Press. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.